From Raleigh, North Carolina, it's The Leftovers with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to HBO's The Leftovers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Everybody, and welcome to Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm the one who has to hose this boat down.
And welcome to the show. How's it going?
I don't want to know where that hose has been.
Well, if it's been on that boat, it's been everywhere.
Well, yeah, what if you mistakenly use the Fraser hose?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what that hose is connected to.
I don't want to know. Well, you know, the whole thing, you know, boat, submarine, it's all about naked people, right?
That's true. A lot of nakedness in this episode, yeah. So hopefully...
I thought it was going to be one of those episodes, because it says nudity in the beginning. I thought it was going to be one of those, we just got guy nudity again. Like, come on, man.
There's nothing wrong with guy nudity. You're not comfortable with guy nudity, Jack?
No, but if I have to sit through some guy nudity, there better be some female nudity, right?
You're equal opportunist on the nudity front.
Exactly.
This is definitely an interesting episode. A lot to talk about. Excited to talk about it. It's a Matt world, which I think is an apropos title.
Yeah, I mean it's has so many significances to it, as is just with any sort of Leftovers title, and that obviously it's a pun on it's a mad world, which, correct me if I'm wrong, that's a movie about like a mad treasure hunt where people are doing absolutely insane things in order to have a chance of finding this vast treasure. And I think there are connections there with the length that people are willing to go in order to get this just reward that they find at the end, and whether that means a treasure or a place in the kingdom of heaven. In the case of Matt, it also has a significance in that, you know, David Burton / God is going to say at the very end, you know, you don't really have a belief in God. You just sort of do things for yourself more so than for a higher power.
And exactly, so, Matt.
So that's all about Matt's world in that regard. So, yeah, lots of...
And be similar to it's a mad world where they're just doing it for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the money.
Where they're trying to find the two palm trees. Oh, spoiler alert.
But it
does have an all-star cast. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
Yes.
I would recommend the updated version, Rat Race, the 2000s version of It's a Mad Men.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, okay. What's her name? Jean Smart or Jean, what's her name? I don't know. It didn't quite have the cast that the original had.
Oh, come on, Jack. You don't think that John Lovitz driving Hitler's car is not the peak level of comedy?
That is a good one, but yeah, I guess John Lovitz, it's over Spencer Tracy. Yes, I guess that would be.
And Cuba Gooding Jr. was in it too, right? I think. Wasn't he in it?
I don't know. I know Whoopi Goldberg was in it. I remember Seth Green was in it because him and his brother's storyline was that his brother had a tongue piercing and so he couldn't talk. Rowan Atkinson was this really weird guy who kept saying, it's a race. And that's like the only thing anyone remembers about that movie. And it ends, spoiler alert, with everyone going to a Smash Mouth concert.
Product of its time.
It's an amazing film.
Let's see. The original had, Spencer Tracy, Jonathan Winters, Mickey Rooney, Sid Caesar, Milton Berle. Do I need to go on?
Jack, you do that thing that old people do that's like, when I was a kid, things were better. So let's move on.
No, hold on. Wait. I'm just saying, I just threw out five names. I think Ethel Merman's in it too, so.
That's great. This is really great conversation.
All right, well, I'll throw out some names for you. Cuba Gooding Jr. was indeed in Rat Race.
Oscar winner.
Brecken Meyer, Gloria Allred. What? I just forgot about Gloria Allred.
She probably sued to get out of the movie.
Oh, and I think who plays the? Oh, it was John. God. I'm blanking right now. Monty Python. John Cleese. John Cleese is in it. He's the crazy eclectic old man who sets them off on their expedition to begin with. So I think what we're all saying is these are two equally fantastic films that everyone should check out as soon as they get off the podcast.
Buddy Hackett was in. Okay.
Let's move on here. We want to thank you for making this show possible. And that's our patrons over patreon.com/JayandJack. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can do so. Click on the link at jayandjack.com. Whether you can give $1 up to what was it in Mad Men: Mad World? $350,000, I think, is what they're going for. There's different stuff at every single level.
And if you contribute $350,000, Jack will personally bring a DVD copy of the film and watch it with you.
The one I got, the one I ordered from Amazon.
There you go. JaneJack.com/Amazon. All right. So we got a lot to talk about in this episode. We also got a lot of listener feedback this week. Since we did the live show last week, we have some stuff from last week's episode and this week's episode.
And we apologize and for not we were going to record a second episode, but time was not on our side.
Hopefully everybody enjoyed the live show. It was a lot of fun doing the live show with everybody here at Casa de Glatfelter. Even though there's some complaints about the audio quality, I apologize for the audio quality. But it's a live show, you know. It's an organic live thing. But we're back in our respective studios this week, and we're ready to talk about this episode. So you guys ready for this recap?
Mm-hmm. Ready.
All right, let's do it. All right, it's Leftovers recap time. We open straight with the opening theme, and this—is it a French whisper song? Like, have you done? Have you figured out what this was, Mike, in the internet worlds?
Yeah, actually, I was figuring it out, but then I got tranquilized by this rogue French woman with this crazy bushy hair, and I woke up strapped to a bed frame. It was really strange. No, from what I believe, I didn't get it literally translated, but I believe, or at least extrapolated from the various commentary on the internet, that whispering was, we're about to see this presumably French naval officer about to do something akin to treason, and I think this is sort of him whispering his last prayer. So it was a little like ASMR like as well.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was him like doing some type of prayer or saying or what he was going to do. We should have enlisted Shandy. Maybe we had more time to translate it directly for us.
I thought there was just something wrong with my sound.
But interesting change of pace there. With last week's episode, Day Melbourne, it kind of ended with this incident, and that's why all the flights are grounded. And we open up to a French submarine. There was a gentleman.
That was going to be my second crackpot theory last week. But we did it live, and I was going to save it for our recorded show. That it was the French guy sent off a nuclear war.
I mean, to help you save face a little bit, I don't think anyone could have predicted this. Maybe it's because this weird cop in Melbourne was like, "Oh yeah, there was an explosion," so you believe that. Oh, maybe the machine blew up. Maybe there was another explosion going on. Maybe it was the GR. We had theories abound, only to turn out that the explosion didn't actually happen in Australia. It just happened in the same ocean, but not necessarily in the region where
some
Kevin
naked guy.
Can we just say, like, talk about, I don't know, not really given the full details, like an explosion. If a nuclear bomb went off, I'd be like, holy crap, a nuke went off. I wouldn't say like there was an explosion. I mean, come on.
Well, if you know,
but either way,
it's a different time.
We see a French submarine, a gentleman unlocks a safe for a key, puts it on his neck, he disrobes. Until he's fully naked, he plays loud music with a shuffle, but switches off from his normal iPod, which is interesting. A man comes in, he knocks him out, grabs his key.
Can I just say something? Why is the guy with the other key?
I think everybody's saying that, yeah.
Okay, that didn't make sense.
But you know,
I'm not in the French Navy.
That's what I'm saying. This is the French Navy.
Well, if it was the French Navy, wouldn't he be running the other way? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. It's
now Shandy is not going to translate anything for this podcast anymore.
It's a joke. I'm joking. No, but it didn't make sense that guy's the one that ran in there. It was his friend that was going crazy. But yeah, come on, man.
Maybe he was like the submarine RA, and they were past quiet hours, and that's why he was.
Should the two guys with the keys even be in the same room together?
I mean, I agree. It seems like there's a lot of, people that could set off a nuclear bomb. It seems
I've seen War Games, and I'm telling you.
Nobody wins.
You don't have
So he runs through the sub. People give chase, locks himself in the control room, needs to stretch to turn both keys.
Now you see why he's naked, because it gives it more dramatic effect.
Well, is that why he's naked?
Yeah.
No, I think he's naked because there's no clothes for people to hold on to him if he's running away.
Oh, he should have greased himself up too.
Yeah, there you go. What do you mean he had a head start?
But still, say if there's no clothes on him, they can't grab anything. I think that's why he was naked.
I'm not tackling the naked guy. No, I'm not.
There's something to grab, but I don't know. You might get court-martialed if you grab that without his permission.
Unless you're the president. So it needs to stretch to turn both keys, gets the detonator, and sends off a nuclear bomb. Pause. Let's pause here for a second. So blows up. An island with nobody on it. Like, what's he doing here? Like, is he making a statement? We don't really know. We see kind of half news coverage, or is this just a thing that is? Is this just a? I guess it's not a MacGuffin, but is it something just so that it makes it more difficult for them to leave Australia?
I mean, I'm going to attribute this to a later comment between this really awesome conversation between Matt and Burton later on, where Matt's asking God, in a way, why did you make the sudden departure happen? And he basically just says, because I could. And I almost feel like this guy is not necessarily imbued with the spirit of the powers that be, but he sort of is embodying the same type of principle that a lot of people did, especially in that first season, when you have these crazy teenagers just doing these random acts of violence just because they can. And I feel like that wanton attitude might have disappeared a little bit in the midst of the second and third seasons, which focus a little bit more on the faith and the spirituality of it all. But sometimes that chaotic attitude still kind of exists, and this might be an example of that, in my opinion.
There you go. Jack, what do you think?
Oh, we were recording?
Yes, yes, we're recording.
I'm sorry. I thought I was waiting for us to start recording again.
Wait, why would I stop?
I thought you said stop recording.
No, I never said that.
No, we had to turn our keys to stop recording.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
And Jack, I'm sorry. I'm not gonna get naked and run away. All right. So it just we had to keep recording. I'm sorry.
That's fine. That's fine.
Right. Let's go to Matt, who arrives at one of his parishioners' home. We see a video of the nuke. It hit a remote island. Nobody was on the island. So, no harm, no foul.
You think that was the intention of the guy the whole time, though, to send the nuke to an island that...
Then why do it? Like, I guess, to Mike's point,
maybe
he's
showing,
just to do
maybe
it.
Maybe showing that you can.
Yeah, create chaos. But so
look,
it's,
at dude in North, look at the dude in North Korea.
Yeah.
Same thing, right?
Yeah. He asked Arturo if he would charter a plane for him to Melbourne or fly the chartered plane, since all flights are grounded, but if they can do like a peace mission, they can go. Arturo pushes back that he needs to be with his dying mother, and Matt offers...
What's the deal with the same total that Nora needed?
Because I guess both bequeathed 20K from their parents, and they held it just for this moment.
I guess so.
So convinces Arturo to fly the plane. Cool.
Would you leave your dying mom for $20,000?
Am I still recording? Did I actually stop it? Because no.
I mean, probably not, but then it also depends on, what was her situation like? Could Arturo think, I need that $20,000 for her medical bills, and it's a quick hop back and forth? I mean, I think Arturo really did just drop him off in Tasmania and head back. I actually think he ended up doing pretty fine, all things considered.
Arturo's sitting pretty. Yeah, I mean, I think one, Matt did it as this whole kind of mission from God kind of deal. He thought he'd get back from there. And
oh, you know what's a great movie? Blues Brothers 2000. Love that film.
Are we still recording? I can't believe you said that out loud.
It's not actually. It's not a bad movie.
It's terrible.
It's a horrible movie. Oh, it's a terrible movie.
The music's not bad. The music's not. There's a lot of legends in that movie. Okay, all that's right. Pretty horrible. All right. Get to the tarmac, and Matt makes a call to Kevin's voicemail, says he's coming to get Kevin. Michael and John arrive with Lori in tow. Matt doesn't want her.
F you, Lori.
Lori had some good F-bombs in this episode.
Oh, man, she counts poops and, bowel movements and...
Spoiler.
That's bombing away.
Matt doesn't want her to join the flight. She criticizes him for turning his psychosis into scripture. She asks about Nora, and Matt doesn't even seem to care. He's like, Nora? Oh, no. he asks
sister?
And then he asks Lori if she needs a whistle because it sounds like he's going to blow off a little steam. she replies with a strong FU and warranted FU.
What? I forget. Why do they hate each other?
I mean, do you remember season one? We had little moments where, like, she blew the whistle in his face.
Right, that's right, because she wasn't talking.
I think she kind of struck out against him through Megan away. Because remember, he was sort of on his path in season one to be like, hey, all the departed people were bad people. And then he also said, you know, hey, Meg, come back to your family. Your husband wants you. And since Lori was sort of like her caretaker in that regard in the GR for some time, she sort of took it out on him. But again, we go back to this man of science, man of faith argument. Quite ironically, we are taking a flight either to or from Australia as well. but I think these Lori and Matt are really going to butt heads here, specifically in this episode, because, I mean, the outlines in this scene, as you just mentioned, Jay, Matt is the man of faith. He talked about the Book of Kevin in the season premiere. He's definitely about, you know, we need to treat Kevin like he's this big religious figure, whereas Lori is a little more well-grounded and is saying, no, he has a mental issue that we need to take care of. This cannot be rooted in any sort of scripture that you may be writing.
Yeah. Yes. you know, John tells you need to respect my wife, man. On the plane, both...
I've shot people before.
both battle to see who knows Kevin more. And Lori does describe how many poops he takes in a day. It's 4. Those counting at home. Lori.
So I guess Jesus didn't poop? Or only did it. Is that what we're doing?
Lori says she doesn't think he's the second gosh darn coming of Christ. When she says that, the plane hits turbulence and Matt gets a smug look on his face.
So can we talk about Matt here for a second? Because I personally believe, as borderline confusing as this episode may be, this actually might be my favorite Matt episode just because of the pure insanity that results from this. But I know we talked at the beginning of the season about this idea that, like, Matt will do anything to get what he wants. You know, Christopher Eccleston has this sort of like a spotlight on Matt Jameson after the episode on HBO Now, and he says he has a sense of mission and he has a central belief and he will not move from that. And I think we see this episode that having that central belief will lead you to not only do insane things, but also have kind of a smug attitude about it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but he always has that attitude though.
But it's even more so. It's like even more heightened.
Yes. Yeah, so I guess that's what I want to ask, is that, do you think that the Matt in this episode, particularly for the first like 3 quarters, obviously he changes at the end, but do you feel like the Matt for this first like 75% of the episode was different in terms of an attitude than the Matt we've seen the previous 2 seasons?
Well, probably because he's dying. So,
well, that. Right? But I also think he feels emboldened by the work that he's doing with Kevin. I think he has a sense of purpose that he can kind of ignore all of the crappy things that happened to him, like his wife and son leaving, him having cancer again, and he feels
his
like
wife
it's all
is alleged son.
All to service this work with the gospel of Kevin. Whereas, you know, the 2 previous seasons, he was so humbled because the world just kept knocking him down, and he didn't really have a sense of purpose. He kind of was just longing for something. And I think in this season, he finally found something in Kevin to kind of hang his hat on. But, you know, it definitely kind of gets knocked down this episode. But I think this is why we're seeing that kind of smugness up until, you know, the later half of this episode that he's displaying.
Yeah, I think that, again, we didn't see the 3 years between Mary waking up and when she ultimately left him, but I feel like Mary waking up was the moment where Matt's like, I've finally been rewarded for my faith and service to God. Because, you know, not only had he been praying for his wife's health, he'd also been praying to have a child, and he was able to get both in one fell swoop. So I think that really emboldened him to be like, yes, see, this is absolutely working. But again, as his conversation with Burton is going to kind of sort of allude to at the end, that might not necessarily be the case.
Exactly that. And yeah, and he kind of took it in the worst way that people can take something like that happening. Instead of being kind of graceful or gracious and all those kind of things, it's kind of emboldened him and made him almost insufferable. But while everybody's sleeping on the plane, Matt starts to have a nosebleed. He tries to take some meds, and the Bible he's reading, the passage is it Daniel in the lions den?
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to take some meds, but the bottle falls. Michael notices. Matt tells him it's for his allergies. Matt asks Michael if he's prepared to do whatever it takes to get Kevin back, and Michael asks, maybe we should ask Kevin what he wants to do. Arturo tells...
That does seem like the logical thing to do, though.
Arturo tells them they can't land in Melbourne. They have to land in Tasmania.
Do you think it was responsible for John and Laurie as parents to take Michael along with them in this cargo plane to another country?
Well, isn't Michael like an adult by this point? Like, he has to be in his 20s, right?
I was wondering, what do we know what age he was at, him and Evie? Because... was Evie in school at the time as well when she disappeared, quote unquote, departed a few years ago?
Senior in high school or something.
Plus, it's 3 years later. Michael has to be
at least 18.
What's her name? Laurie and Kevin's daughter.
Jill. R.I.P. Jill.
She's in college, and she was. Michael, I think they were the same age, so he's got to be college age.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, because they had a little thing going on last season.
Yeah, so it's been 3 years later. He can go. The world's going to end in a few days anyway.
She's the lost Cunningham at this moment.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Michael seems to always have a greater sense, or at least, I don't know, a more level head. And I think he's right in saying, maybe we should see what just happens. Matt's got his mission. Once in Tasmania, they find out that they have to take a ferry to Melbourne. Matt asks to buy 3 tickets. Laurie gives a solid FU.
I did find that funny.
Do you think that was unintentional, or do you think he was really like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize? Because, that's a pretty big Freudian slip.
I think it was a bit of both.
It was a dig.
Matt is told that the ferry for the night has been sold to a group. If he wants to leave now, he'll have to take it with them. He goes to a woman in a lion headdress who asks him, I'm 91, having a son. He lets a man in a red hat pass. Matt asks why he can go on. She said he's a friend of the captain. She says there's going to be a lot of sex on the boat, free of judgment. She'll let Matt and his friends on if he can tell the dirtiest joke you know. Laurie tries to say, but no, him. And he tells a pretty terrible pimple and a priest joke.
Was I the only one that laughed?
I was like, no. I was like, ooh.
It was less of a laugh and more of like a shock, like, oh.
Yeah.
Because, it's type of something that you might hear on like a pub late on a Friday night. Not necessarily from the guy who's giving you sermons every Sunday morning.
Matt got that from Nora. That's a Nora joke.
She lets them on. Then the rules are ladies have free reign. No one can control the lionesses. And when midnight comes, no man mention his name, lest that man become him. And that is for Fraser.
How much were we hoping that Kelsey Grammer would make a cameo?
I definitely was, because Damon posted an Instagram referencing the Fraser theme song. So I thought maybe that would, come into it. Considering,
we had Mark Lynn Baker, we had the 80s sitcoms being referenced. We need, the 90s, early 2000s sitcoms being referenced as well to really, show the tapestry that The Leftovers paints.
Well, I posted on our Facebook page, this Frasier the Lion story is 100% true.
Yeah. There's a Time article that got written a couple of years about it, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, because they played a song. The Frasier the Lion song. Like when
Toss Salad and...
Different.
Scrambled eggs.
I hear the lion calling.
Toss salad and scrambled eggs.
Mercy.
A male lion is boarded onto the ferry. Fraser, the lion song plays. Matt tries to see if they can buy return flights over the phone, but it's still grounded. Laurie wants to get some sandwiches. Matt thinks there's still time to get Kevin back in time for the 7-year anniversary. John and Michael think that maybe they're supposed to be here and see what happens. Need to accept that whatever is going to happen, it's going to happen here. John says maybe if he gave his wife more control, she wouldn't have left. Which, most normal people would be like, F you, Laurie. But It was not the case here. Matt says it was a test. His nose starts to bleed really bad, and he runs off to the bathroom.
There was a fun line from John here where he says, as you said, we're just going to need to accept that whatever's going to happen is going to happen here. Do you feel like that was sort of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the audience that we're probably not going to see Miracle again?
I think so, which is kind of sad. I mean, there's only three episodes left, so really, it's almost like what the time crunch they're facing in, you know, their journey on the show is the same we're facing with the amount of episodes left. So I think it's a good call out. I don't know how we get back to Miracle at this point.
Do we need to go back and see any of the characters there? I don't think so. I think we're done with it.
I was going to say, so unfortunately that means no more Erica. So she had, Regina King unfortunately only had one scene. I guess this means no more Tommy.
Yeah.
We sort of definitely said no more Jill even after the first episode. Is there anyone else that we're really missing from Miracle, from the Miracle cast, now that we have this core five or so characters down in Australia?
No, and really, if you think about the ones they left behind, is there any loose ends to their story? I don't think so.
No,
I mean, I'm wondering if, considering how integral Tommy was as a character, especially in season one, I'm wondering exactly, thinking about now where we left things with him, because I believe the last thing we saw him do is have this conversation with Nora about her abandoning Lily. Do you feel like we needed anything else from Tommy? Is this a wrap on Chris Zelka for the series?
I think so.
I think so. I think I can't see anywhere. Well, he's not in Australia, so there's no reason to go back. Like we said, no reason to go back there, so... He's done.
Jill's wrap up. She's in college, so she's not part of this fray. Lily,
Erica's doing fine. She has a trampoline. She's good to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think a good point there, Mike. Is that your hot take for this episode?
I guess so. Well, and also considering that, again, not to spoil too much about the next time on, but it seems like the new arrivals to Melbourne want to stay there for a little bit. Looks like they're constructing things, and we do have one character tell another that whatever you're doing, I'm in. So it seems like, from what we're seeing both in this episode and future episodes, it's going to be all about Australia for the next three.
Plus, we're only a few days away from the seven-year anniversary, right?
Yeah, it's getting there.
And as we see, it's hard to get back to the mainland from back to the United States from Australia anyway.
Not to mention the nuke went off.
So I think it's, we're not leaving Australia.
Going back to Matt cleaning his nose, one of the crew says God must have done that to him. And, you know, I was like, God, like, what does that mean? But there's actually somebody there that thinks he's God. Matt must investigate, tries to talk to him, but God doesn't want to talk to him. He hands him a card that says, yes, I'm God. Matt reads the card to the other disciples, Michael, John, and Lori. Michael asks, why are you letting it bother you? You know he's not actually God. Michael says, you should tell Lori you're sick. Matt protests. And he says, my dad used to keep everything inside, even to my mom. He met Lori, and it made him better. Matt says, no, he got better because of us, because of the work that we did. Matt says that Lori isn't a part of this. Michael wisely says, Michael, John, they were all disciples. Maybe she is one, too.
Mm.
I think that's fair. Again, I think Michael's the kind of wise, level-headed
All disciples. Okay.
Or is Lori going to be the Judas in that regard, whatever that may mean, and that she sells Matt down the river for some reason?
Still Matt.
Why would she do that? Oh, Jack, you still think Matt? Well, again, Judas was a disciple, Jack, so they're still all disciples.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll definitely get to the Yahweh David Burton stuff later when he actually speaks, but I think Michael does bring up an interesting point about John, and I feel like we talked about this a little bit during our season preview, our season premiere, because we really have not seen too much of John this season until now. I mean, does it seem like John has really, I mean, it seems like he's changed, I would say almost too much. It seems like the guy that was maybe placid on the surface, but really fuming on the inside, and, you know, like Matt is going to tell him later, the guy who would go on a witch hunt against people who said that they were, you know, doing spiritual things to the point of burning their houses down, to have him suddenly become this peacekeeping, you know, John Lennon glasses wearing guy over the course of 3 years.
Tree hugging hippie.
Yeah, giving peace a chance. Though it's interesting, though, I believe that John is wearing the same type of glasses that Evie was wearing before she disappeared. So maybe that's sort of in memory of her. But do you feel like the character has undergone too much of a shift? Do you think there's a possibility we might see some of the old John Murphy creaking out in these last few episodes?
It's possible, even though, you know, Matt tried to instigate that Adam a little bit later in the episode, and he didn't seem to really be too into that. But it seems like there's the John's superpower hiding beneath the surface, and it would be interesting. And I think, well, again, it's only three episodes, because how do you let the anger out? How do you let the Incredible Hulk become the Incredible Hulk and then resolve peacefully?
But, okay, he's been peaceful for 3 years. 3 years, he's going to explode.
Right, maybe. He's got Laurie, man. Laurie.
But everybody yells at Laurie, but him?
But it's because she's the right one for him.
Can I just go back to the guy, the crew member seeing Matt's sink full of blood and just goes, "Hey, did God punch you?"
It must be a regular occurrence.
Hey, are you not? Are you all right? Do you need a doctor? I work on the boat, but I gotta get back to the sex. Sorry.
Wait, hold on. It's Australia, though. Doesn't like everybody like punch everybody in the face in Australia? Isn't like a more normal occurrence?
I mean, Australia
there?
Was founded as a colony for British criminals, so they have roots in that.
So I guess it doesn't matter.
Like, that's just like a normal like conversation, right? Just like being punched in the face.
Well, I do agree with Jack, though. I feel like this boat crew throughout the course of this episode is definitely shirking their responsibilities. And whether it's because they want to take place in the debauchery, or whether it's just because, like, hey, a private party rented this boat out. We really don't have a jurisdiction to like step in and really, you know, just throw down the law of the land or the sea. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, it seems like they're very amicable and chummy when it comes to things like people getting punched in the face or presumably thrown overboard.
Yeah. Yes. But again, if they're more interested in partaking in the sexcapades,
you can see where they got distracted.
Matt walks through the sexcapades to John and Lori. Matt asks if he can speak to Lori alone. Lori says her and John were offered to be part of a four-way. Lori tells the story of Fraser the Lion. He's like 91 years old. Is that in cat years? That has to be in cat years.
Yeah,
right?
It was cat years.
They basically brought him from some Mexican zoo that went bankrupt and was going to kind of live this retirement out in this other zoo. But that night he had sex with 35 of the lionesses or something like that. No, had a bunch of lionesses that had like 35 cubs. And now there's kind of this, cult or whatever around Fraser. Lori says that they should go with Matt's story. Matt says it's not a story. Lori slips that Kevin saw Evie. They both agree not to say anything. They both say, "Oh, you're a good person." Matt asks to be alone. He pukes overboard and sees lowercase g God throw a man overboard. He tries to get people's attention. No one cares. So he jumps in after him, and then people notice. So interesting scene, one between Lori and Matt kind of maybe figuring each other out more, or getting along more, or almost just both playing each other, maybe. And then Matt witnessing God kill a guy. So thoughts here?
Yeah, I think that there might have been some ground made up, but then it was almost squandered when Lori said, like, "Oh, yeah, you know, we're both giving Kevin stories, essentially." But Matt, to him, it's not a story. To him, it's a reality. And so I think that, you know, any sort of mended fences were very quickly demolished with that statement. And Lori, you were doing so well for this episode until you let it slip about Evie.
Right.
F you, Lori. Damn it.
Well, in all fairness, she didn't do it to John. It was really Matt that was being the jerk in that regard, I think. I feel.
Maybe should she have said something sooner?
Well, I mean, we're gonna talk about it later. Yeah, I was definitely thinking like, oh, John's going to find out. This is when he's going to revert back to his old self. It's going to lead to strife between them. But again, for now, water under the bridge. It seemed like everything was okay. But well, I think
Lori's a doctor. She could be giving him sedatives or something like that too, that he doesn't know about. Am I right?
Crushed.
Maybe that's why he's so calm.
Maybe she's hypnotizing him or something.
There you go.
I have seen Get Out, so scary. Scary stuff. In the captain's quarters, afterwards, he tells Captain the story of what God did. He came, we find out that its name is David Burton. He was an announcer for the Sydney Olympic Games, and he was going on a hike, and he slipped, broke his neck, he died. So his friend he was hiking with put him in a cave so, you know, the dingoes wouldn't eat him. When he came back the next day, Burton was fine, and he was alive. Similar to Kevin Garvey here, maybe.
Well, this also connects back to season two in a couple of ways. So if you remember, there was that random TV story that came on, I think, in Lori's episode in season two about
that's
the guy
right.
who came out of the cave. That was named, his name is David Burton. If you remember in the first episode of season two, Moses, rest in peace, writes a letter to Michael that's addressed to David Burton.
That's
and
right.
This nice. Guy who played David Burton, Bill Camp, he was beardless, but he appeared not once, but twice in this purgatorial afterlife hotel environment in season two as well.
Well, yeah, he was on the bridge, right?
He was on the bridge, and he was the guy in the hotel bar who convinced Kevin to sing karaoke.
Yeah, guy gets around.
So, I mean, I know that by the end of this episode, we're really saying, like, oh, this guy is just, you know, a fallacy, considering, you know, he says, I'm going to heal your cancer, and really just snaps his fingers, and that's it. But I don't know. If we're saying that this other stuff exists, there's a chance that he really could have some validity in his statement here.
So now wherever he was placed in the caves, it could it be a similar geo place in Australia that has the same properties as Miracle? So will Kevin be able to truly die and come back if he finds maybe wherever David Burton was?
I mean, maybe it depends on also like the radius, I don't know, because, you know, Kevin, when he died in Miracle, it wasn't in the lake itself, you know, the eponymous Miracle Park. It was in the trailer, in Burgle's trailer, and it was right outside in the visitor's center. So maybe it doesn't even need to be in the cave. Maybe if wherever Kevin Sr. and Grace Playford are camped out, if it's nearby to the caves, it could be possible.
Yeah, it very could be. The plot thickens. The captain says, if you can get Burton to confess, I will be happy to get the authorities. Matt won't let it go. He goes to the head lioness for the manifest. She doesn't care that someone has possibly been killed. He says, you only care about Effing and Fraser. And he spoke his name after midnight. And then they take him and they try to milk his seed and he stops it and
yeah. What did you guys think? I mean, I definitely thought when he said Frazier's name that I thought, okay, he was gonna face a similar fate of him having to, like, I don't know, have sex with every single woman on board or something. But what was gonna happen turned out to be much more graphic than I thought.
I didn't see that one coming.
And he got out of it. But then he basically shamed all of them, saying, your people are sick, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, to which they replied, boo. I'm kind of with this line, this Fraser cult here, because, you know, they just wanted to, like, do their thing in peace. They didn't want any judgment. They let this guy on, and now he's, shaming
them. It was a private party.
Yeah, he's their guest.
Yeah.
Right.
He's not playing by the rules. Again, he's being Matt and not caring. He's just thinking whatever he's doing is the most important thing. Because again, it's a Matt world. And they're all just living in it. But I'm on the Fraser cult side here on this one.
Yeah, I mean, But I'm also surprised as well that, like, I thought they were going to uphold the ceremony where, like, I know Matt was, like, held down, but he sprung up pretty easily. I would think that, like, some of those bigger guys, maybe even the crew members that they brainwashed, would, like, force him down and make him have to go through the process. It seemed like as much mockery as they may make of him for turning down the ritual, they were sort of like, it's okay. Let's just go back to what we were doing.
Well, maybe they were shocked that someone would fight it.
Well, no, because again, I think for the people that are there, I don't think it's like a super like an actual cult where they would, you know, rape a guy against his will. I think it's more of, you know, they're there just for, you know, whatever shared sexual experience they want to share, and it's obviously
Matt was fighting, they said, all right, let's just let him go.
Yeah, let's cut our losses here. He doesn't want to play, because I think if people do it, they're probably kind of want to take a part of whatever that ceremony is. I'm not part of this Fraser club, but I would think that maybe when you would say it, they want to actually
what
be a part
club
of.
Are you part of?
It's part of the Spin City Club.
The Get Your Swing Off My Lawn Club. One Lioness seems to care about what he said. He goes after God himself and says, you think you can get away with this? David Burton punches him in the gut.
When will Matt learn?
He doesn't ever. Lioness comes up to him and tells him there's a plan, tells him when the boat docks, stay on the boat. He goes to the other disciples and tries to get John to beat up David Burton to confess to what he did.
John says, no, I can't. Yeah. Lori's got me sedated. I can't do anything.
Lori's got me sedated. The beans are spilt that Kevin saw Evie. Lori says he was protecting John, and again, the sedated John takes Lori's side. He's like, yeah, I'd do that too.
I wouldn't have told me either.
And Matt goes, okay, I guess I was wrong.
Matt's trying to invoke bros before hoes here, right? That's basically what this entire group thing was. It was like,
I think so.
John, why'd you bring your girl? She always drags stuff down.
Yeah, especially Lori. She's such a downer. I liked it better when she didn't speak.
Matt apologizes, says he's tired, and
you think that Matt only apologized because it didn't work?
I think so, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He was totally backing out of Plan A and going quickly to Plan X or Plan Axe, as
there
it was.
There you go. Matt gets the axe in a wheelchair. He knocks David Burton out, takes him to Fraser's descendant, and has an intense conversation with God. He gets him to say that he threw the man overboard, but he won't tell the captain and authorities. Challenges all of Matt's faith, doesn't own up to anything that has gone on in history save for the sudden departure. Why? Because he could. Matt says there has to be a reason for that. Everything he's done is for a reason, sacrificing his happiness, his wife and son leaving him as a test. And he shouts, I did it for you. And there's just that pivot moment where, you know, whether Matt believes it or not, he's you know, talking angrily towards God, the capital G God. David Burton says, you didn't do it for me, you did it for yourself. To which Matt replies, is that why you're killing me? David Burton kind of nods yes. He says, I could save you again if you untie me. Did anybody else at this point say, oh, my God, he's going to kill Matt. Matt's going to be killed.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I loved this scene for
amazing.
So many reasons. Yeah, it was incredible because I feel like this is the culmination of everything we've seen Matt Jameson do.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun because coming into this scene, he totally wants to be the John Murphy. That's why he stoked his flame before him, trying to, you know, really rile him up of what he used to be in season two of like, I'm going to go after the people who claim that they're gods when they really aren't, which a little bit of a hypocrite, Matt, considering the religion that you're touting at the moment of taking some random guy and claiming he's a messiah-like figure. But then by the end, he's almost, I don't even say he's believing, I guess he is believing it to a certain extent, because he's just, now he's just throwing his exasperated attitude, so many years of pent up anger and frustration and desperation from a young age, and just throwing it to say like, oh, you're finally meeting God, what do you want to tell him? And he just lets loose so much. And this is, I feel like this is where we really see Matt at his truest, that it you know, it seemed like his attitude was always like, I'm just going to put on a begrudging smile and know that, you know, the Lord will help me through it. Now that his Lord is finally in front of him, he's going to let him know what he feels and yeah. how he's felt about having to work so hard and having so many obstacles put in his place. And then to essentially not have that validated, to have this proxy for God tell him like, you know what? It doesn't really matter. You know, you weren't really doing it for me. You were doing it for yourself. Was just so gratifying. This was Matt's pivotal moment throughout the entire series
yeah.
of The Leftovers. And it was so, so beautiful to watch.
Now, do you think that the reason David Burton didn't kill Matt was because in the end, Matt was believing that he was God, that he was speaking to God?
Or that he knew they were docking soon, and Matt was a more well-known person because he talked about him, so he probably couldn't get away with it as easily.
You think that's what it was? Because it seemed like he had the thing. But there was a line that he said in there that he goes, when he says, you know, Mary carried your son, he goes, no, it wasn't my son.
Yeah, her word against mine.
Well, what's Matt's wife's name?
Mary.
Oh my God, stop it.
I'm just throwing it out there. Just throwing out this. Come on.
Only you would take this beautiful, amazingly acted scene and try and shoehorn into supporting one of your theories.
Mary.
So
and we did get the confirmation here as well, which is I think I might have made a guess to this in episode 2 this season, that the illness he has yes. is indeed his cancer. His childhood cancer has come back, a la, spoiler alert for Breaking Bad, Walter White in the final season as well. And I think the confession also might have led to Matt's very changed attitude after his talk with David Burton here.
Well, I think it's almost kind of like letting go in a way.
Yeah.
But, you know, he unties David Burton. He doesn't kill him. Even though I was like, oh, Matt's dead. I don't know the actor who played David Burton, but like, this scene
Billy,
was so well
Bill
acted.
Camp.
Between the two of them, really well acted, just top notch.
It was a great scene.
He, you know, says, I can cure you. So he gets untied and he snaps his fingers and says, you're cured.
Did anyone think for a second that Matt was going to take the axe and knock the lock off the lion cage?
Oh yeah, I was thinking either knock the lock of the lion cage or, you know, beat David Burton to death, because we know he's capable of that before. But I'm not entirely sure. Maybe he feels like he's cured, or maybe he just realized in that moment, like, oh crap, I just fell for a sham. Though again, it might not be a sham, depending on the instances that we've seen Bill Camp before on this show. And he thought, like, well, that's a sign to me that, you know, I have, like, look what I've just told someone that I thought was God. These are clearly feelings that I've had riled up inside of me. Maybe it's time, like John, for me to let go and for me to just move on in the world, knowing that I don't need to necessarily do things to, from my justification, benefit a higher power. I can still act selfishly, but I need to know that I'm acting selfishly.
Agreed. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Because then afterwards, you kind of just have this Matt stoically looking at the dock as they're pulling in. And the captain goes up to him. He says, a fishing boat found a body. It matches your description. He's called the authorities and would like you to give a statement unless you have pressing business in Melbourne. And Matt says, I don't. So
no.
It seems he's even let go of this, you know, manic desire to get Kevin back to Miracle.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense because, again, he's been pushed back the entire time from both a travel perspective, and even his own disciples were like, we really don't need to go back to Miracle. So it seems like Matt is settling in with the rest of the audience as well, thinking like, okay, yep, we're going to stay down under for now. But I still think he's going to be involved in what's going on. But he's at least against the idea of we need to get Kevin back to Miracle in order for, you know, whatever's going to happen to happen.
Yep. Tells the other disciples, thank you all for coming. I'm glad you're here. And Laurie's like, what's wrong? Are you okay? he says that he's dying. We see the cops arrive at the dock to get David Burton. He flees. The young lioness and some others let the Fraser descendant go. As David's running away, the lion goes after David and presumably kills him. The cops shoot the lion. The disciples look away. And Matt turns around, just a shot straight on his face, and says, "That's the guy I was telling you about." Close the episode.
So good. Again, we have talked so much this season about how The Leftovers is sort of like a source of surprising black comedy sometimes.
Yes.
And that is a great example of it. And there's so many, again, fun meanings in there of, like, you know, there's the literal interpretation of, like, oh, see, that's the guy I was telling you about, the guy that pushed the guy overboard. There's "that's the guy I was telling you about" in reference to God himself. It's just so many fun interpretations and such a dark way to end an episode.
Yes.
Of an interpretation of God getting mauled to death by a lion that was ported around the world for virile purposes is just pure off-the-wall insanity, but it's one reason why I love this show.
Well, you notice the police waited till after he was attacked before they started shooting.
Well, if the police know who he is, are they going to be like, okay, is he going to come back after this?
Well, part of them will. Peace over here, peace over there.
To Mike's point, as he mentioned earlier, this is kind of the pinnacle of Matt's story, really, the climax of his journey, you could say. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, now that he sort of has his story, you know, is he going to take a back seat to what's about to happen? And I don't think this is sort of like a curtain call where characters step forward and they have their scenes and they step back. Kevin Sr., for example, looks like he's still going to be heavily involved in the action. But you kind of have to wonder, where does Matt go from here, from both a plot perspective and almost an attitude perspective?
I don't know whether he'll get his faith back or he'll just kind of be almost just an observer, a silent observer or supporter, as opposed to a driving force. It remains to be seen. It remains to be seen. Jack, what do you think?
You know where I stand.
Oh, geez. What?
He's going to kill Kevin.
Ugh. We'll just have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Well, it's working out great for me. At least they're in the same country now.
Well, I was going to say, it seems, not to spoil the preview too much, but it seems like another character is set on killing Kevin before Matt might.
Well, there's a lot of people want to kill Kevin.
Overall, three episodes left. How are you guys feeling with three episodes left?
I mean, I know I said this at the end of last week, but I'm just not sure where they're going to go from here, which makes it extremely exciting. It looks like, again, not to go too much into next week, but I think there are some characters that are being brought back in that I don't think we expected to at first, considering how we left things at the end of episode 4. But now that our main ensemble is coming back together after being kind of separated to the winds the past few episodes, it makes it exciting because this cast is what really makes this show, in my opinion. So as long as the writing stays as strong, to have this cast all together in one country, one environment, working together, makes me very excited.
Agreed.
All right, well, that's what we thought about this episode. Now it's time to get to what you guys thought about the past two episodes. It's now time for listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. We got a lot of emails. We'll start with the emails and then finish with the calls. Let's do the ones from last week. So, Jay, Jack, and Mike, it was great to be a part of the live show, watching and then podcasting experience last weekend. While totally irrelevant to the actual story, as a frequent traveler, I was really bothered by the many inaccuracies in the airport scene. First, Global Entry has to do with entering the U.S., thus the name Global Entry, and nothing to do with leaving. The correct term should have been TSA pre-check. Secondly, they would have been separated long before getting to the TSA checker, as there are typically two lines. Thirdly, while unlikely, the watch would have set off the metal detector once it did, Nora would have had a female agent wand her into a full body frisk, and Nora would not have gone through the detector again. But maybe this has to do with Carrie Coon's technology issues in Fargo as part of a crossover conspiracy. And lastly, airport bathrooms are never empty and do not have lockable doors, unlike the rest of the show. This was all too unrealistic. I will counter a couple of these real quick because my wife and I travel a lot. I think that was a family bathroom to where you can go, like, change your kid's diaper and stuff. And that is a single one where you can lock the door. So I can back that one up. And also, I think Global Entry, if you have Global Entry, you also have TSA pre-check. So maybe she was just you know, saying it as a generality as opposed to exactly what she had.
As a brief tangent, I didn't talk about this during the live show because I didn't want to jinx it considering I had to fly back, but we went through a very Nora Matt-like string of bad luck.
Oh, yeah.
Flying down to Raleigh for the podcast weekend. I won't go into it too much, but those of you that might live in New York or the area know that there was a heavy amount of rain on the Friday where I flew down, so we had two canceled flights. We're able to sneak our way or squeeze our way onto a flight connecting through Pittsburgh that ended up having to turn around on the tarmac because the bathroom was broken. And then we finally got down there about, you know, like, what, 10 hours after we were supposed to. My wife's bag never came, so we had to, you know, finally got it back the next day. And flying back, for some reason, because of all the fracas that had ensued on Friday, they had canceled, for some reason, my wife's ticket, but not my
what?
Ticket for the flight to New York.
I didn't know that happened.
Yeah, so Monday morning, we were sort of at the end of our own rope. We were having our own crisis of faith, screaming at the American Airlines agent that serves as David Burton from that perspective. But thank goodness for, you know, the technology that have, like, the pre-check-in where, you know, they email you sometimes, be like, yeah, hey, check in before your flight, because that's how we realized that I had gotten one, but she hadn't. So we were able to get her back on the flight. Everything worked out well flying back into New York. But yeah, it was, I mean, I think the juice was definitely worth the squeeze in that the weekend was super fun and it was so great getting to meet so many people, including Joanne. But I mean, Friday was definitely the most hellacious travel day I have ever had. I was very much feeling like Nora Jameson in that, or Nora Durst and Matt Jameson in that regard.
Yeah, and kudos for, like, sticking out and making it through it. Again, Colleen and I were long distance. Well, she was in New York and I was here for a long time. So we've traveled to and from New York. I can't even count how many times. And LaGuardia and that whole area, like, we've been through hell. And it's kudos for making it through that, because it is not a fun experience whatsoever. But we were glad you were here because it was a fun weekend.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Jack, it was really difficult for you to get here too, right? It was like a 20-minute drive, I think.
Well, there was an accident. I had to wait. It took me an extra 5 minutes. At that point, I was starving. I had nothing to eat. It was bad.
Touch and go.
Let me take out the tiniest violin out of its case and start playing it for you.
And then I hit every red light.
So back to Joanne's email here. More to the actual storyline, I agree that it will be very interesting to see how the writers can pull this all together in four episodes. They seem to be expanding the questions and issues left to be resolved. Sorry, Jack, but I do not believe Evie was real, just part of Kevin's projections. I also do not think that the Guilty Remnant has anything to do with the machine and that it's a real radiation machine. Whether it works or not, much like the questions of an afterlife, is a one-way street, so there's no way to know if it really works. But I believe the two Dutch scientists believe it does work, which made the comments about not knowing where it sends you and if you are alive when you get there very interesting and it's insightful. Joanne.
Sorry, Joanne, that you're wrong.
She does bring up a good point, though. I mean, in our live show, we sort of talked about how we were asking, you know, when they asked that question about killing the baby to prevent cancer, which I think Matt might want to do at this point. But we were wondering, like, since we've had two people answer differently and still both get them quote unquote wrong, was it less so the actual answer, more so than the way you answered it? Maybe what Joanne is alluding to here, that the Dutch scientists sort of threw out this idea that, like, oh, we have no idea if it actually works. Maybe that's another lure to throw out there on the proverbial fishing line to see how perspective people to send through the machine might react to that.
Well didn't she say during the podcast that maybe men have to answer a certain way and women have to answer a different way, that maybe they but I still think there's no machine. It's just the GR messing with them. We may never find out with only three episodes left.
I don't think we're ever going to find out. Yeah, I think that machine is gone. I think it's clear that we're spending the rest of the series out in the outback. I think getting back to our more natural roots. So I think that was an interesting examination about this idea of, like, if you had an opportunity to, you know, be able to see what's on the other side, how far would you go to do that? But I think now that we've sort of seen that and the stakes that Nora would go through, and it's clear that she's still not over the loss of her family, now we can sort of move on from that with the weight added onto her character.
Agreed. Let's go to this next email here from Jamie. Hey, guys, had fun listening to the live podcast. Wish I could have been there. Now my thoughts on Good Day Melbourne. Actually, for the live podcast, maybe next time we do the – next year we do the J&Jack meetup, Westworld will be back on. Maybe we'll have another chance to do it then. Anyways, now my thoughts on
– Mike, you might want to leave like a week.
Yeah.
I know. I was going to say I might have to take a stagecoach down there.
Now my thoughts on Good Day Melbourne. What an uncomfortable episode, as if we didn't even see it coming. Kevin and Nora give each other the emotional bitch slap we've been waiting for. In the same episode for Orange Sticker of Season 2, Patty tells Kevin, what you and Nora have, that's not love, it's damage control. Score one for Patty. Also in the same episode, Kevin finally acknowledges Patty, only for her to give him the old Rickroll. It seems like in this week's episode, he Rickrolled himself. So kind of score two for Patty. And the scene with Lori letting Kevin know that he was indeed losing it. Great scene. Taking a much kinder note than when Patty let Kevin know he was indeed losing it. I don't want to kill myself. Well, you're certainly entitled to your opinion. Yeah, Patty, we get it. You win the game. Also, can I just add how much I love the music choices for this show? The theme score is amazing, and every tune they add in between is in perfect harmony, seriously, no pun intended, with the emotion of the partnering scene. I love the juxtaposition of this week's choices. Most tunes this week were in such astounding contrast to what the emotional moment was taking place that it left my skin feeling itchy. I think it really made you feel the disconnect that Kevin and Nora were experiencing, as if I was on the relationship chopping block. Fantastic. Looking forward to the next week. Later, taters. Jamie.
Jamie, I think you need to get something for that skin itching. I don't know if that's associated with the score of The Leftovers. I agree that the soundtrack is fantastic, but if you have those sort of weird psychosomatic effects, that might be speaking to something a little more deeply. I'm no Lori, but that's just my prognosis.
Maybe he just has an aversion to Aha. I don't know.
and brings up a great point that, you know, we talked before in the previous podcast about how we've had the Never Gonna Give You Up, and both the Never Gonna Give You Up and Take On Me 80s schlocky pop songs were used to effect in episode 4 of the second and third seasons, respectively.
Well, I will say that I think Take On Me is a fantastic pop song, whereas Never Gonna Give You Up is kind of a crappy pop song. But that's just my personal opinion. But it's funny, I watched La La Land again this weekend, and Take On Me is in that movie as well. It's all connected.
Oh, I forgot, because the one I remembered was, is this when, spoiler for La La Land, is it when Ryan Reynolds is in that like 80s yes. cover band that's playing that pool? Because I remember I Ran So Far Away, but I didn't remember Take On Me.
Yeah, and the lead singer is singing it poorly, so I was like, oh, this could have been another cover that they played in this episode, because there was different versions.
Ryan Reynolds was in that movie?
No, Gosling. Ryan Gosling. But yeah, I would agree, like the music courses are really good. And excited to see where it goes from here. So Jamie's in the Patty for president camp here. Thinks he really likes Patty.
Well, she was running in the this purgatorial universe.
This next email is here from Ethan. So get ready, folks.
Oh, boy.
Okay, I'm ready.
Hey, guys. I have seen a couple of comparisons online to the fight at the end of the episode and the fight Tony and Carmella had in Whitecaps. That was an intense episode of The Sopranos.
That was so realistic.
I can see it. We are definitely looking at actors on that level. It has taken Kevin a long time, and he cut way harsher than he had to. He gave her the truth plus extra. I think he had to do it for himself, too. He had to cut the cord. He said what needed to be said, but he went the extra mile with afraid you're going to give that one away, too, and how long before you move past it. But I guess sometimes you have to hit your point incredibly hard to get it across with things like, then you should go be with them, or Ethan, stop emailing the podcast. I really wish we had Kevin come out and say to her the things this book happened to me. But he's right. He couldn't tell her anything, just that he needed three hampers, but couldn't even tell her that without getting his balls busted. But this is a milestone in the series, just like in Whitecaps. The Kevin Nora relationship has not departed. It's dead. Any more speculation of the radiation zapping is playing into Damon's hands. It's the reddest of all herrings, and I don't think it will play into the ending of the show at all. Have a good week, Ethan. P.S. Don't hate. Looking at you, Mike. Ooh.
No hate at all this week, Ethan. I completely agree. We were just talking about how the fact that I think the radiation element of it all is dead and buried. Its half-life has expired. And I think he brings up a good point as well about how, you know, Kevin should on paper say, hey, like, this stuff actually happened to me. This is the experience that I had. But like we talked about, him and Nora don't have the best track record, or she doesn't have the best track record of reacting well to those things, considering what she did after he said that he had seen Patty. I think Kevin, one of the reasons why they had that fight is that he feels like he can't really confide in her as much as he thought he could in the beginning of season two when they were admitting secrets to each other.
Yeah, he can't admit to her. No way. Mm-hmm. And I hate the fact that 2 weeks in a row I've agreed with Ethan.
Well, not to mention, it almost correlates with Matt's whole story during the middle part of this most recent episode with the guy getting pushed overboard. It's this idea of like, you've experienced something, you've seen something, you think it's the capital T truth, but like the captain tells him, like, there are no witnesses, so your story is not exactly true to me. And so you have to figure out, you know, can you pass things off as the truth when people have not outwardly experienced it? I mean, that was the whole thing with Matt's narrative in season two, right? It was like, I did not sexually assault my wife. She happened to like come alive for this one night, and then I got her pregnant. Nobody believed him until she finally woke up.
Yep.
Some of us still don't believe him, but that's just...
Oh, ridiculous. let's go to this.
Oh, wait. So you're saying... So, Nora, so you're saying you don't believe me, Nora. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not.
You're,
yeah.
You're now
Am I
Nora
now? Okay, that's fine.
Nora.
I'll take that on.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Take on me. We got an email from Jamie for this week's episode. So let's see how many more scores Patty gets this week. Hi again. Well, this episode was interesting. There are so many similarities to this season's episode 5 and season 2's episode 5, No Room at the Inn, that I could be here all day, so I won't compare every point. First off, for whatever reason, both seasons episode 5 were chock full of wiener wiggling.
Great use of alliteration there, Jamie.
Seriously, seemingly no end to all the wieners. Moving on. Both episode 5 and season 2 and 3 were Matt in place of Job. Episodes, endless tests, endless complications. In No Room at the End, Matt's faith seems to have been put in full effect, giving him strength and keeping him in the forward motion, pushing him to repent. In its Matt times 4 world, his faith starts out strong, but the tests seem to deplete him as his faith seems to be fading, and it seems as though repenting is out of question. Another note, in both of these episodes, animals played a part in smiting those who have opposed Matt and his mission. Season 2, it was the goats causing the car accident that killed the man who robbed him of his wristband. In this episode, the lion killed God himself. Like I said, there are many others, but these stood out to me, and was I the only one who was waiting for Matt to say, "What about me?" Such a lost moment. What about me? There's my lock. Thanks, guys. Until next week, Jamie.
Matt, a lot in common.
What are the chances that Matt is like the beast master then? Because he has control of the goats. He has apparently control of the lions. Is Matt going to be the one to... I know Kevin Sr. was hallucinating about this ark being built when he was at Grace's place. But could Matt possibly be the Noah figure by the end of the series?
Maybe. Who knows? All right, well, those are our emails. We have some phone calls to get into, so, gentlemen, what do you say we get into those?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Hey, Jay and Jack, this is Brad in Chicago. I have a crackpot theory for The Leftovers. I think that on the 7th anniversary, everybody in Miracle City will disappear. The last time, the original departure 7 years ago, nobody disappeared. I think this time it'll be the exact opposite. What say you?
Hey, Jay and Jack. It's Brad from Indiana. Calling in about episode 305, the Matt Sidrick episode. Really enjoyed this one. There were some times where I was really, much like the last couple of episodes, really wondering where the heck they were going. And I think the payoff at the end was pretty incredible. This entire episode, I think, stems from a philosophy that a lot of people don't like. It's one that I adhere to as a psychology professor. One of the things that I really feel about humans is that this thing that we call altruism really doesn't exist. If you really pare it down, altruism is something that doesn't exist at all. And I think that God kind of let Matt know that he had been hiding his entire life behind this notion of altruism, that Matt gained his positive self-regard and his being in life by supposedly giving of himself and sacrificing. But in all honesty, what Matt really was doing was he was wanting to be seen as a good person. He was wanting to be seen as what we consider as human to be an altruistic person, when really that's, if you look at it from a different perspective, he's actually being incredibly egotistical. He's being very egocentric, that he wants to be this type of person, and therefore he's actually, by what it appears to be, giving away his time and his resources, he's actually gaining what he wants from that. And it really, in my opinion, if you really get deep into thinking about, you know, the, you know, as Abed would say, getting meta about it, if you look at altruism, the deeper you get, the more you realize that it can't exist, because even if you do something that you absolutely abhor, you are doing it because you feel that, you know, there's a cognitive dissonance inside of you and you should be doing it, or you want the bad feeling of doing something for someone else, when actually that's the feeling that you're looking for. So it's one of those, you know, rabbit holes that, you know, you can't dig yourself out of. You just keep digging. And as one of my all-time psychological heroes, Homer Simpson, said, you know, dig up, stupid. You can't dig up on this one. You just keep digging deeper and deeper when you start thinking about this. But I absolutely love the fact that I think Damon was coming at us with this notion of, you hide it behind this veil, this persona, this mask of, I am a good person. I want you to believe I'm a good person.
All right. Thank you for those calls. And just for anybody that does call in, I think it caps the call at 3 minutes. So if you're getting close to that 3 minute mark, just realize it might stop the call. And if you still want to give in stuff, you can just call back right after that. But anyway, sorry. Let's jump into these calls.
I mean, the Brads provided some good material here from both Chicago and Indiana, representing the Midwest.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad from Indiana brought up this great point that we were sort of dancing around beforehand about this idea that altruism might not necessarily exist, and that, again, not to spoil the end of Breaking Bad too much, but, you know, when you have Walter White's final scene when he's with Skyler and saying, you know, Skyler says, oh, you're going to go on your whole spiel about how you did all this for the family, and he says, no, I did this for myself. I did this to make myself feel good. I think that's Matt's sort of realization as well, is that he may think he's doing everything for the good of the community and the good of his congregation, but he was doing it more so to feel good, that at the end of the day, he wasn't necessarily working for the goodwill of others, but more so his own benefit as a result from the goodwill of others. And of course, you know, I gotta love a call that references a Simpsons episode. And actually, Dig Up Stupid was from the episode of The Simpsons that did a parody of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Whoa!
Yeah, so many connections.
No, really?
Yep. The Homer the Vigilante.
Wow. Well, there you go. Nicely done, Brad. Nicely done. I don't even know if Brad realized it.
No, did he? Maybe. I think Brad did. Which Brad?
Well, Brad from Chicago's theory is better than any Jack's Crackpot theories this season. I think that'll be. Do you think all the people in Miracle are going to disappear?
No.
Is that a hard no?
That's a hard no.
Mike, what do you think?
I'm sorry, Brad. It's not happening.
I mean, it's just tough because that one makes sense. But again, since most of our main characters are down in Australia, is there any sort of narrative significance, or is there a lesson significance now that those characters are away? from Jardin. Wouldn't you feel like that had more of an emotional impact if like John and Lori were still there, for example, and then Matt and Nora and Kevin find out that they're gone? Now it's sort of like, oh no, Tommy's gone, Eric is gone, maybe jail, depending on if she goes still goes to college in the town. I can understand like
all the dogs are gone.
Oh no, and they're turning into people and eating sandwiches. The end of times are truly near. I think it would be a fun sort of ironic way to end the series, but again, since now we've now diverted our attentions away from Texas, I just wonder if it's worth it to go back to that well.
Yeah, I just don't care. I don't care if they go back. I think we're done with Miracle. I think we're all done with it. So why go back to it?
I don't know. Because we love Miracle. Miracle is a cool place.
No.
Cool happening place.
Eh. No. Really, that's it's got the life size, the large balloon of what's
Busey,
your name?
Busey.
Gary Busey. That's a happening place.
Pretty cool. Pretty hip. Yeah, hip town. All right, we got two more phone calls. Well, it's three phone calls, but again, I think somebody hit the 3-minute limit and had to call and just kind of finish out their thoughts, and then another one right after that. So let's jump into those now.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Mike. It's Michael calling from Los Angeles. Just a few thoughts on this episode. The French dialogue at the beginning, I hope we have someone that can translate that, because I'd be interested in knowing what they were saying. As I was watching that, I was like, what does this have to do with The Leftovers, which I find myself experiencing a lot. And then I remembered, you know, the explosion and the canceled flights. I guess for some reason I was thinking those flights were, it was like specific to Australia, like the explosion happened in Australia or some kind of terrorist attack in Australia. Not to beat a dead horse, but I do feel like the last couple of episodes demonstrate how strong the writing on the show can be. The Nora and Kevin episode was really interesting and gripping. And this one too, I just feel like everything that happened in the episode, you know, you just wanted to see what happened next. They just did a really good job of hooking you and taking you on this journey. And I do maintain that I think the crazy white fella episode will be one of the low points. I thought this episode was really funny. I thought there were a lot of laugh out loud moments, whether intentional or not. The whole conversation with God was hilarious. I think, you know, he meant it sincerely, but some of the answers that he gave, I just couldn't help but laugh at. I think the similarities between John Locke and Matt Jameson are even more, solidified, you know, from before. I find myself feeling more for Matt, and I think maybe it's because he was so kind to Mary, you know, even in her state. And that he believes in God, whereas I think John believed in the magic of the island. I think it's interesting to see Lori and Matt square off, because we really haven't seen them interact since season one when, you know, she was blowing a whistle in his face. So it's interesting that they reference that because it's been so long for those two. It's just we didn't know exactly how they both felt about everything. Or at least Lori, how she feels about things, and we got to see that. I hope we get to see more about how Lily was given away by Nora. I'd be really interested in that. And I think moving forward with these final episodes, we're going to see some more montages to speed up time if they want to get more accomplished and more story told. If not, I think that we're going to the final episode will be, you know, the 7th anniversary. Hi again, Michael in Los Angeles. Just finishing that last thought. But I think the final episode will take place on that 7th anniversary of the departure. And then I had one other question. Were you guys still going to do another podcast about last week's episode? So I know at the end of the, you know, the live YouTube episode that you mentioned you were gonna do another one, but I didn't see it. I need my Jay and Jack and Mike. Please. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Mike. This is Scarlett. This episode of The Leftovers was by far my favorite of the season. It felt so loaded and layered and really strange. I loved it. Something I noticed during this episode is the motif of whistles. First, when Matt calls Lori, when Matt asks Lori if she brought her whistle to blow off some steam, then when Matt jumps overboard and the staff member blows his whistle, and lastly, when Matt speaks the word Frasier and the line lady blows her weird giant whistle. Maybe Dean was right and dogs have taken over and communicate regularly via whistles. Who knows? Regardless, I thought it was interesting and a weird thing to come up multiple times. God made his debut appearance, which was pretty cool. I found Matt's reaction to David Burton to be pretty comical because he's so adamant that Kevin is the Messiah, yet he's furious that Burton is blaspheming and claiming to be something similar. I'm sure you guys will be aware of the fact that Burton was in the hotel when Kevin died, which signified that Burton was actually dead and came back to life. This is not an insignificant detail because it shows that other people besides Kevin can rise from the dead. This also bodes well for Kevin in case he's in the mood to wear a dry cleaner's bag over his head, since it implies that resurrection can happen outside of Miracle, Texas. Also, the details of Burton's death seem to be comparable to someone else's. Who else in history do we know of that died, was taken to a cave, and rose again? When the captain asks Matt whether he has any pressing matters to attend to once he gets to Australia, I think the reason he said no, even though he's been dying to get Kevin back to Miracle, maybe because he realized that Kevin is potentially not the only person who has experienced resurrection, and it's possible that he's not the Messiah after all. I don't know if this is peaceful for Matt or if it's devastating, but I think that's how he was feeling. Also, I don't know if you guys noticed, but the book that Burton had been reading the whole time is called Lonely on the Mountain by Louis L'Amour. It's a Western about a gang of three brothers who ride out to save one of their own who's stuck in a faraway land. The book itself switches points of view multiple times. I don't know if it's intentional, but learning that the book has similarities to this episode felt really meta when I was reading reviews about the book on Amazon. It's just fascinating. Anyways, thanks again for podcasting, and I'm so excited for next week's episode.
All right, thank you for the calls.
Should we get Scarlett as a fourth host?
Seriously, it's some great research on her part. That Lonely on the Mountain stuff. I only saw the author's name when I was watching the episode, so I couldn't pick out too much. But yeah, that story seems to make sense. And there's also, you know, a nice other, speaking of meta, moment when he says, you know, what happened to my book? I threw it overboard. And he says, oh, it was just getting good. And Matt says, well, you know how it ends. Yeah. And again, that could be another moment speaking towards us of like, maybe this will have a similar ending as the book itself. We're not entirely sure. But yeah, a lot of stuff packed in both of those calls. But I guess focusing on Scarlett's, this interesting idea that one of the reasons why Matt is saying he has no pressing business in Melbourne is now that he knows the story of David Burton, he realizes that Kevin's not the only person to pull this act of coming back. And therefore, there might be another, and he doesn't necessarily need to get Kevin to Melbourne. Might be an alternative take on why he doesn't feel like it needs to happen right now.
Hmm. Now, Dave Burton, when he was in the on the other side, did he have to kill anybody, or was he just there? Because I mean, he was
just there. He was almost serving as a guide for Kevin. Because remember, he was the one who was on the bridge in Jarden, you know, directing him to the well. And then in the second time he came back, he was the guy sitting at the bar who said, oh yeah, well, you know, let the cops sing karaoke. So he seems, I don't know, he seems less of a denizen in that regard and more of like a well-worn tourist. He seems like a frequenter.
But here's the thing, because presumably he's only died once, but does that mean he's died many times where he knows it that well to be a guide?
Yeah, it's very possible. Or again, he could have some otherworldly connection that might hearken a little bit to have his statements actually be true.
That would be a twist.
Going to the fisherman he threw over. Now, is it a fisherman? Was it a guy that?
No, he wasn't a fisherman. Also? Fisherman found him.
Oh, fisherman found the guy he throws over overboard. Is it someone that can return?
Could be possible. He could be doing his own little Grace Playford thing and being like, oh, is your name Kevin? Great, I'm gonna throw you overboard.
Yeah, I mean, but could it be, but
or a Virgil thing where Virgil kind of helped guide Kevin into killing himself?
But why did he throw someone overboard? I mean, I guess the crew knows that he's got kind of a temper.
And what was his answer to the sudden departure? Because he could. I think it was just him sort of saying, like, I think him trying to represent God also sort of shows how all-powerful and random a higher power can be, and that's one example of it. You know, it seems like this guy might have just been in the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't want to put too much stock into it because we don't know obviously what the circumstances were, but it could just be as easy as, hey, you know what? I'm the almighty Yahweh. I can do whatever I want. You go in the water now.
Okay.
Thoughts on Michael's call?
Well, first, I don't know how many messages we sent back and forth with each other about when we could record.
Yes, we tried. We will admit that it was a busy week. I mean, we, you know, once we got back to our respective lives, we had to catch up on a bunch of things, and there's a lot of other great stuff going on in the Jay and Jack network as well. As a result, I know that Jay and I had our respective studios a little clogged up too, so it made things tough, but we're happy to have addressed some episode 4 things on here as well, and we do apologize for that. What do you think about Michael's idea that there will be a lot of montages in the final 3 episodes to pass the time so that when we get to that final day, it can be on the finale?
Well, I mean, if it's only, like, what, 3 days left in their world and there's 3 episodes left, like a day an episode, I think it's still a lot of time if that's mm-hmm. all it's going to be. Like, it ends with the 7-year anniversary.
The final episode's longer, isn't it?
We assume it's going to be. I don't know if it's confirmed yet. Is it confirmed anywhere?
I don't know, because I know even with the Westworld finale, they only confirmed it was going to be an hour and a half, like a week before the finale, yeah. Right?
Yep.
I thought I read or heard it, but maybe I'm wrong.
We speculated last week if there would be, I believe.
Maybe that's where I heard it.
You heard it from us.
Then it definitely not happening.
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe have an epilogue after whatever happens, or don't. I mean, it just you could see how it goes.
I think once it ends, it'll fade to whatever it does, and that'll be it.
Fade to black on fade a black. Player piano.
Yeah, there you go. Or a little journey. I don't know.
No, let's not do that. That's
just to make Ethan happy.
Well, thank you everybody for your feedback. A lot of great feedback this week. Yeah. If you'd like to call in for next week's, it's 385-390-311, or our email is leftoversjj@gmail.com. All right, it is now time for the momentous occasion of every TV post show that we do, and that's Jack's Crackpot Theory of the Week. Action Jackson, do you have a crackpot theory for us this week?
You know, the best one was last week. I didn't have to give one. even though I had a pretty good one during this show, I didn't have. That worked out good. All right, so the final scene. We're all kind of speculating what the final scene is going to be. Kevin's going to be riding on a horse with his girlfriend Nova, and he's going to see a destroyed Statue of Liberty.
Oh, God.
He's going to go, damn you all to hell, and that's how it's going to end. What do you think?
Is it going to be Planet of the Dogs instead of Planet of the Apes?
Well, actually, that was the reboot where Mark Wahlberg lands where he thinks is Washington D.C., but it is the ape in Abraham Lincoln's seat instead of Abraham Lincoln.
I mean, you know, it's just as good as the original. I think that's a running theme of this podcast, right? Any remake is just as good as the original.
Around the same era, that early 2000s, late 90s.
I've watched that once. In the theater. Didn't we go to that, Jay?
We saw that in the theaters. Yep.
Because the guy behind us, his biggest complaint with the movie was, it's just not believable talking apes. That's why I hate that. Literally, he said that as we were walking out of the theater. I go, really, that's your biggest complaint?
The movie.
That's just not going to work for you.
All right, enough stalling, though, Jack. What is your crackpot theory of the week?
Well, we see Nora as later on in life, an older Nora. And it looks like, I was saying the radiation burns?
Uh-huh.
We're thinking from the fake machine. I think there's going to be a nuclear holocaust. I think they're just setting us up for that. And I think Nora survives, but she has some scarring from it. So I think the world's going to end.
Talk about this being a satisfying ending. Would that be a satisfying ending? Bang. Just they all blow it up.
But not everyone's going to die. But Nora will survive.
Huh. Okay.
Do you think that this would all occur on the day itself?
Was it that bad you had to cut me off?
Oh, no. I think you cut off. We just didn't notice.
Oh. It just stopped.
What was your question, Mike?
So you think that this big nuclear cataclysm would occur on the final day, on the anniversary?
Yes. I think that's where they're setting us up with the French guy setting off a nuke. It's going to, someone's going to go crazy and the whole, it'd be like War Games. Everything's going crazy. So that's what's going to happen at the end. And the final scene, we'll see it. We'll see that scene again with Nora saying, no, I don't know.
That's a depressing ending though. Don't you feel?
Well, it's been a pretty depressing show for the most part, right?
Yeah, but I feel like the ending to season two was anything but depressing. So
yeah,
again,
it was uplifting.
I know we're looking into way too much about this idea of like, oh, will it be a satisfying ending and what exactly satisfying means. This would be a very bleak way to end things, which is sort of like season one of The Leftovers MO. I could still sort of see it in the show's wheelhouse, but I would not like that to be the ending personally.
I'd be okay with it because it's just the... I'd be right, so that'd make it even better for me. But I just think that there's a reason why they showed this French naked guy running around setting off a nuke. So I think that's what's going to happen. Sorry.
All right.
The final scene, we're going to see that scene again with Nora riding her bike with the doves. And do you know Kevin? No.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. But I hope that theory, Jack, does not come true.
What if it does come true? What do I get?
I don't know. What do you want?
I don't know. Think of something. You got a couple weeks.
You get Blues Brothers 2000 on DVD. How about that?
Wow. That I'm hoping.
You know what, Jack? Actually,
I'm hoping for Nuclear Holocaust.
I'll get you the VHS copy. Okay.
Because then I won't have to play it. Great.
All right. Well, that will wrap it up for this week's Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike. If you'd like to give us a call, you can do so at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Call anytime with your questions, comments, and or theories. Also, send an email to leftoversjj@gmail.com. Once again, it's leftoversjj@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJackGroup for TV show discussions on all current TV shows, including The Leftovers and Fargo, which Mike also podcasts about with Jeremiah on the Jay and Jack Podcasting Network. How is Carrie Coon's story arc going right now in the Fargo universe?
She's doing well. I won't spoil too much, but I know I talked last week about her big episode. She still was part of the main action this week, not completely dedicated to her, but she's still doing a fantastic job. And Fargo itself is about to reach its halfway point. So it's interesting kind of sort of looking with how the two seasons and respective shows are progressing, having a lot of fun with that. And brief plug for the Bloom family as well. I know my wife was on the broadcast this past week talking about all the shenanigans from this past podcast weekend and more. And I cannot say enough that amidst the travel difficulties, it was so, so much fun getting to see people in person, getting to hang out at, you know, Casa J, getting to meet Jack in person for the first time, getting to do that live podcast. I had so, so much fun. I can't wait to do it again with Westworld or whatever may come in 2018.
Yeah,
that was a fun podcast.
Very.
A lot of fun. And Mike did great at the trivia as well. If you've listened to the our Patron's Choice show, Mike subbed in for the broadcasters crew. And I hope the broadcasts win, so I will never live it down.
Two out of the three people on this panel helped the broadcast team win.
At least you're finally admitting it.
You know, sometimes you gotta you know, help the wife out. I'm just, you know.
There's other things you could have bought her flowers.
You know,
or
I didn't know there were steals. I know we could steal the questions. If I knew we could steal, I wouldn't have given them the answer. I was just trying to be a good.
It's husband. The same every week.
I didn't. It was Matt's game. He was making it up as he went along. I didn't know the rules.
We blame Matt too.
Not to spoil the ending of the quiz off, but for our patrons, it was the Patron's Choice show. For those that don't know, for our patrons that contribute $5 or more a month, you get an exclusive show each month that's chosen by our patrons on our exclusive Facebook group. Where there's also other fun discussions and things like that. If you'd like to become a patron, you can do so today. Click on the Become a Patron link on jayandjack.com. Contribute whatever you can. It all goes to help our podcasters and the production costs associated with making these fun podcasts.
And spoiler alert, the West Wing is leading right now.
Yeah, a West Wing podcast.
Ooh, I'm watching that for the first time, so I'd be interested to hear your guys' thoughts on it.
I haven't seen The West Wing since it was on, since it aired, so I might have to, like, you know,
I've seen
brush
like
off the
I've seen like four
dust.
Or five times.
So, yeah, West Wing is leading right now. So for any non-patrons that love the West Wing, maybe like to hear us do a podcast about it, well, this is a great time to join the Patreon fun. Also want to thank a couple of special patrons, Tack from Tokyo, Molly the Millennial, and Eckhart Richter. Thank you very much. There's a full list of all of our patrons on our website, jandjack.com, that we thank. You know, when you have a lot of people over at your house, it can get really messy. And I think one of the few things that kind of kept our house in order was our awesome Neato robot vacuum, which I got on Amazon.com. So if you like a sweet cleaning robot, no better place to get it than Amazon.com. So go to jandjack.com/Amazon. That'll take you to the normal Amazon you're used to, but a small percentage of that sale will go to the Jane Jack production fold. So just bookmark it as your normal Amazon, jandjack.com/Amazon, and anything you buy in there will help out the Jane Jack production crew.
I think a better push would have been crappy remakes.
Crappy, yeah. Blues yeah. Brothers on DVD 2000.
We can make a late push for that as a patron's choice show as well.
That would be actually a fun podcast to do.
Oh, anywho, Mike, when is usually due later in the season with Rob? And Rob has a podcast for Survivor, right? Is that coming up anytime soon?
It will be. I won't say when it's officially announced, but it just might be coming up soon.
Oh, awesome! Those are my favorite Rob has a podcast episodes. So.
Well, don't build up your expectations too high.
Oh, come on! It's awesome. Anything else, gentlemen, before we go?
No, I'm looking forward to what the last three are going to provide. And again, we're in for a roller coaster ride of a season so far, and I can't wait to see what the next hill will provide.
Awesome. I can't be the only one who was wishing we'd get a fourth season. And I'm the one that said they should have stopped it too.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see how it ends, and then I think we'll be okay. It's gonna be okay.
If it ends with the explosion and all.
We're
that
in the golden age of TV right now. There's no shortage of great TV shows to watch. So let them in when they want to end.
It's not as good right now as it was.
What? There's still a lot of great stuff. Westworld.
Westworld, but it doesn't come back for another 10 years.
Will
or
and Grace is coming
next
back?
Year.
Will and Grace. Yeah, I had enough of that when it was on. Talk about bad sequels.
Anyways, that will do it for this week's Leftovers. We'll see you guys next week. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.